Hello and welcome to Live from the Darkroom, the podcast about photography that started in an actual darkroom a few years ago. Today, I am so excited about the guest and topic that we have. I am chatting with Carrington Spires, a New York-based videographer and photographer from Chatham, Illinois, about the use of AI in photography. Carrington currently works in the theater industry in New York, and you can follow him on Instagram at Carrington_Spires and see his work at CarringtonSpiresPhotography.com. I've really wanted to have Carrington on the show since I started recording episodes, and so it's somewhat of a dream recording for me. I'm super excited. We get into some really fun stuff, and so can't wait for you to hear it. You can follow myself and the show on Instagram at Andy Henderson or andyhenderson.co. So without further ado, let's just get into it. Welcome to Live from the Dark Room. I mentioned this in the intro, but I'm so excited to chat with Carrington Spires about AI. Hello, Carrington.
Hey, Andy. How's it going?
It is going great. I feel like this is a dream episode because, okay, you weren't around when I recorded the intro, Carrington, but I really meant it when I said that I've been wanting to have you on the show since I started doing episodes. So I really appreciate you being on the podcast today.
Oh, that means a lot because I did not expect that. I'm doing a follow-up. This is basically the follow-up episode to the one you did with Matt Murphy. That was the last one you did exactly 2-3 years ago, back in 2021.
2 years ago. I can't believe it just because I didn't give up on the podcast. I've just been so busy. I moved back to New York. And I just have not had the time, and it's something that I've wanted to get back into. And so I couldn't be more thrilled that you are the guest today. Carrington and I met, it had to have been on a shoot, right? Do you remember?
It would have been, definitely with Marathon.
Right.
And I'm wondering, when did you come to the city? When did you finally move? That'll help me pinpoint the show. I want to say Diana, but that doesn't sound right.
2019. So it would have been something like The Inheritance or Diana or...
I would say The Inheritance around then, because Chris Morrissey from Marathon Digital was still there.
Right.
He's no longer with the team, but he was there at the time. I think that's when, The Inheritance. That was written by Matthew Lopez. That was the last show he did.
Yeah, and the first... I feel like the first time I remember working on something with you would have been Jesus Christ Superstar, but that was during COVID. But I know that we worked together in 2019 a lot too. So I just can't remember the exact thing. But regardless, we've been working together for a long time. We work together all the time now. You do a lot of photo, you do a lot of video, a lot of Broadway stuff, a lot of stuff that's not Broadway. So I guess first question, it's just an icebreaker question I ask everybody at the beginning of every podcast episode. If you could only use one lens for the rest of your life, what would it be and why?
I have semi-two answers. And this is because I do both photo and video. So jumping back and forth between the two, at least as far as a mindset goes, is very challenging, especially it's even more challenging if you have no time to even think about it. Sometimes that's easy. Sometimes that's a helpful situation. But so the answer is a 24-105. Now, the 24-105 is typically an F4. My dream version, this is kind of the part two to that answer, is I would love a 2.8. If I could have a 2.8, 24-105, I would be so happy. I guess I should talk about the 35-150mm lens. That is my current all-rounder. However, I can't use it for everything video, but it is my one-and-done photo lens for the most part.
What's the aperture on that?
It is, and it's a variable 2-2.8.
Oh, wow.
And so my rule of thumb is just keep it at 2.8. And if I can be at 35, then I can stop it down at 2 if I need to. But, no, that's like the perfect lens that I have right now. It's just really heavy, so I try to avoid bringing it if I don't really need it.
Sure.
But if it's the only thing I have to bring and can bring, I'm going to do that.
No. That's a good answer. I love that everybody has given me basically a different answer so far. I feel like I've had a few repeats, but this is all good. And I'm going to look into that. You said 35 to 105?
35 to 150.
35 to 150. That's wild.
It's an expensive lens. It's like 19 grand. Or not 19 grand. Goodness. 1900.
19 grand. I was like, okay, there's no way. I'm not getting this.
No way. That is, those are Leica prices right there.
Right.
No, it's like a $1,900 lens, and I got it for 18. I think I got it through Amazon Renewed, and it was perfect. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Good to know. Okay, so that kind of jumps me into the next question. I want to hear a little bit about your journey with photography and videography. So how did you get into it? What were you shooting when you first started? And what are you doing now?
So I'll start off with, I started photography. I did a digital photography class in like eighth grade, I think. And then I just kind of kept up with it. I think I eventually got like a Nikon D3100, something like that.
Classic.
And I had the kit lens, and then I eventually got a 50 mil, had that, and then I think I got myself a D750 at college. In college, I went to school for cinema and photography, and the primary focus was just movie making, you know, filmmaking. Mm-hmm. And then the journey of college kind of took me towards the theater department, because so I applied for a job. I just wanted to, and I guess I'll bring it back up, is I was at the Daily Egyptian as a sports photographer for the most part, but I also did other stuff. And then I no longer worked there, and then I applied to be like an office person at the theater department, which is right down the hall from the cinema department. And they were like, oh, you do video, you can be our videographer. And I was like, okay, I didn't apply for that, but all right. And so the first show I ever worked on was Adam's Family. The primary thing was for me to just shoot the shows in their final dress rehearsal week before up to opening, create a promo video, which is essentially a trailer. If you ever see a movie trailer, it's like that. You got to make it really exciting. So I started with the Adam's Family. Oh, goodness. I think that was 2015. That was fall 2015. And then it just kind of went from there. I stuck with theater, and I felt like I had a really good niche in that space, because I felt what I really was missing from all the filmmaking stuff that I was doing. And I was really into the filmmaking and just, you know, making a bunch of short films with it was an organization called Movie Camera Militia, which then changed to Movie Camera Movement. That was throughout the years. I was really involved with them, but then I kind of just fell out of love with filmmaking and making movies, just because the hours are insane. Mm. Which is kind of ironic, because, you know, us photographers and freelancers are working basically 24 hours.
Right.
24/7 right. For the most part. So that's ironic. But I really just wanted to do stuff that I had more control over, which was kind of a selfish mindset that I had back then. So I got really into and just stuck with the theater. And then eventually, at a certain point, so I worked really closely with the marketing director. And the marketing director eventually got let go. So he was a good friend of mine, too. He mentored me as much as he could, just to get the job done and be as good as I could. Same as Vince Romberg. I think he's still over in St. Louis right now. But when he got let go, I kind of was the only one that knew, like, how the marketing stuff worked. So that just pushed me even further into doing photo and video for theater. And then eventually I got an internship at the Glimmer Glass Festival up at Cooperstown, New York. And that was an awesome experience. I worked alongside the staff photographer to do a bunch of events. And then I moved to New York in 2018 and just wanted to keep doing the same stuff I was doing. I met with Matt Murphy, who was on the last episode of this podcast. And he was really wonderful. And I've done a few shoots assisting with him. And it kind of was just a lot of learning. And then also at the same time, reaffirming what I know about the stuff I was doing back at college in the summer stock theater. I was wondering, the biggest question was, am I doing things right? Am I doing things the correct way? And it turns out that I was pretty much on point and in the neighborhood of it. It's just a lot of fine tuning and learning, and just the process of getting older and just keeping at it is what is going to make me even better. So So yeah, I've just been in New York since 2018, working with social media teams like Spotco, Marathon Digital, AKA. My relationships with them have grown. Did recently do a key art shoot for the Thanksgiving play, which is on Broadway, that's closing, I think, in a week. And I'm actually seeing it on Tuesday. My photos are on the playbill, photos are on the front of the house, which is really cool. And I never thought that I would get that far. Like, I honestly, when I got to the city, the photographer space is pretty saturated. I'm sure you kind of feel that too.
Sure.
It's pretty saturated. So I kind of just like gave up that idea of ever doing like key art stuff that would end up on a poster or billboards, whatever you think of. I gave up pretty much that dream. And I just stuck with all the photo and event stuff with social media, because it's been paying the bills for the past few years. So pretty much right now it's just a lot of grinding and working in the theater space with the social media team. So it's kind of been the bulk of my work, and I'll do some other stuff here and there. But yeah, that's the most part. And I've been doing B-roll stuff with videography too. That's been really cool to kind of be a part of that process. Harry McFan is one of the bigger names in the videographer space for those. He works a lot with O&M, but he's brought me on and been really encouraging with keeping up with that kind of work and just growing a lot with that. But yeah, so there's a lot of video and photo stuff right now. It's a bit of a mixed bag with me. But
yeah.
It keeps up the workflow, I'll tell you what.
Definitely. No, and that's great. I actually, that was my next question, was going to ask you about a specific project or series that you've worked on that you're most proud of. But I also wanted to bring up the front of house stuff for Thanksgiving play, because it was so cool to walk by that theater after it went up and see your work out there. I'm sure that was just a completely crazy experience for you too, but I know you've also had like your photos on the Times Square billboard for Shucked, that big, you know, rectangular video billboard that's right in the middle of Times Square too. So like, what were those experiences like for you? And I guess, what was it like to not only, you know, take those photos, but then see them in those areas that they're now living?
I tell you right now that it still doesn't like feel like anything has happened. Like, it just feels like I did the work, I did the job, and then the teams are able to, they use them for what they had to use them for. And it doesn't even feel like they're my photos, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Kind of like an imposter thing of like, that just can't be real. So that's, that's the feeling I still have, but I am very proud of the work on those. But the, you know, AKA brought me on to do the Thanksgiving play. And shout out to, Cole from that producing team for bringing me on to do that. Cause that was just a real test of, you know, I haven't really done a whole lot of photography in the past year. And so I don't think he even knew that I really have been doing mostly video for the past year and a half, really.
Yeah.
I haven't done a lot of photo. And so it was really a test. I wasn't necessarily nervous. I was just really worried about getting the job done and doing it as correctly as possible. And so I was really taking my experiences from 2019 when I was at the Summer Stock, and then any of the shoots I've done with Matt Murphy, and just any of the other photographers that I've been able to do BTS for, like Jenny Anderson and Emilio Madrid. Those guys are, I'm always watching their setups and just making sure that I kind of have a clear idea of how things should be shot, and kind of having an idea of how lighting works. Because sometimes, you know, you spend so long doing one thing, you kind of, you don't necessarily forget, but you could get out of the groove of how to do a certain thing. Like, one thing, funny, and it's a funny thing with me, it's like, sometimes I'll put a flash, like an on-camera flash on, and I'll forget, how do I use this? How do I get this to work properly? It's just things like that. I just wasn't really doing a whole lot, and I felt confident enough to get the job done just based all of what I've seen and learned from the past few years. And then just to see everything in the front of house at the Hayes Theater was just mind blowing. It's really cool. And for Shucked, you know, that was after the Thanksgiving play shoot. I did a series of content shoots for Marathon. Like, I did the Goodnight Oscar. There's some photos on their social media that are mine. And it's all portraits. These are portraits with the cast members. So Goodnight Oscar was one of them. and Shucked, and then Parade, which I'm still working on right now. And those photos are turned out really well. I'm really happy with them. But yeah, so it's all those just been really cool to and reaffirming and reassuring that I am able to do that type of work like I've always wanted to. And I guess what's kind of nice right now is like I'm not expecting any of that kind of work. Like I honestly have always felt that photographers like yourself and like Michaela Reynolds and Heather Krishanowitz, who's actually doing a, but both of them are doing so much work with Playbill and on their own. Like I would expect you guys to be doing the key art stuff next. Like I did not expect myself to be doing any of that. So like, it's a really cool, and I don't take it for granted. And it's a really cool situation to be in, but you know, I've always felt that like you would be doing the key art well before I ever would. Like I never thought I would have that chance. So, and I mean, I'll talk about later when you get to the, when we start talking about like other photographers, like you're definitely up there with one of my favorites right now.
Oh so, man, that,
yeah,
that means a ton to me. But I mean, something you just said, kind of goes into the next point a little bit. And I know that a lot of the work that we do as photographers, just as a whole, is work that is eventually turned into something else. So you had your photos for like Thanksgiving Play and Shucked, and they turned them into something else. They had, you know, a graphic designer come in and work on them. My photos are frequently not edited in the sense of color correction or anything like that, but they do, you know, they'll add things to them. They'll have a graphic design team work on them in order to whatever it is that they need to do. Recently with Sweeney Todd, they turned some of my photos into more of like a video, and they had text coming in and out, and they had fake fog coming through. And so I think our photos are frequently adjusted and edited to include things that aren't necessarily a part of the original image or in a way that we didn't necessarily think would be worked on. And so somewhat in the same vein, our main topic today is obviously AI, as you know. And so I did kind of just want to jump in and chat about that. I've really been eager to talk to somebody about AI. I feel like it's literally the only thing that's on my TikTok For You page or like Instagram Explore feed. These videos that I've been seeing recently are unavoidable. Have you seen the videos of the generative fill AI tool in Photoshop beta?
I've seen some. I haven't seen enough to like describe them, but you know, AI, all of that stuff is kind of mind blowing. Even the stuff that's like you type in, say for example, Dwayne Johnson and Jack Black doing something, or Dwayne Johnson and at a volcano, you get an AI image that is generated of that, which is insane to me.
Right. It's weird. And like, I know AI is, at the time this podcast is being recorded, fairly new. I mean, we had, you know, ChatGPT and the, what was it, the DALL-E thing a while ago that was like all these generated images, like you were talking about the rock at a volcano or whatever it is. And so the newest thing that's recently come out is this generative fill tool in Photoshop, and it's in Photoshop beta. You have to download an entirely different version of Photoshop. It's the beta version. And within Creative Cloud, you can download that. I think they have it for like Premiere and other things as well. So you'll definitely have to check that out. But there are videos that I've been seeing recently where mostly what's happening is people expanding the photo that they've taken. So they take a photo of a guy standing in front of a mountain, and then they want to, you know, expand it out. Maybe it's portrait orientation. They want to make it landscape. And so they expand the borders. In the past, you would just use the clone stamp tool and fill in the background as much as you can. Or there was a fill tool, that you could, it's like a smart fill tool basically as well. But, what this is doing, this generative AI tool, is it's expanding the borders of your photo so naturally. So again, let's say you have somebody standing in front of a mountain. in the fill, it wouldn't just fill in shapes that it thinks is right. It will add like a lake off to the side or more trees or more mountains or whatever it is. And so I'm seeing these videos come across my feed and I'm like, this can't be real, right? Like it can't work that well. And so I downloaded Photoshop beta and started messing around with it to see if it could live up to that hype. And so I really only tried a few things. I haven't spent a ton of time working with it, but it was really interesting. So the first thing that I did was I removed the background of a portrait that I had taken, and I added in this like industrial concrete wall. I basically just selected the background and typed in add a concrete industrial wall. And I tried a couple of different times. It looked fine. Like it was okay. It wasn't bad. It did take some extra work around the subject. It was trying to pull in some of the subject into the background, I guess. So the subject's clothing kind of got extended a little bit, and I had to, you know, use clone stamp or whatever to adjust that back. So it was a little bit of work, but I guess my thing is I don't necessarily really see the advantage of this over just replacing the background with the photo. For this specifically, I guess the advantage is you don't have to find a photo. It will do it for you. You know, you don't have to make sure you're using a non-copyrighted photo or anything like that. It's just going to generate three options for you. And then you can regenerate as many times as you like. I don't know. I mean, specifically for that, it was okay. The second thing I did was I tried to expand the background of a photo like I was talking about. So I saw a couple of those videos and I was like, okay, I need to try this too to see if it will work. And it took some finagling, but generally I feel like it did what it expected you to do. So I can see that being really useful for studio photographers who are using like seamless backdrops, because it just like so naturally expanded the backdrop. And it's not difficult to do that without AI, but it worked really well. So that's something that I definitely would see myself using in the future. If I need to, you know, just raise up a backdrop or, you know, expand it a little bit wider or whatever. The thing you have to remember is it's a beta version. And so it's only going to get better over time. Okay. The last thing I did, and then I'll shut up about it, is I saw a video. I saw a video of a guy adding sunglasses to a photo of himself. And I was like, okay, that cannot work. And I tried it and it didn't. It was horrible. It did not work at all. It basically takes like whatever part that you've selected. So you're supposed to use the selection tool and like select over your eyes and ears. And it basically took that image, that section that I selected, and turned it into just AI garbage. It was like putting in a new nose, like a new skin tone. It was adding in these like fake eyebrows too, which I thought was really weird. So it was just generally bad. And so all that being said, like I tried a couple of things and a few things worked and a few things didn't. So I guess what do you think this could mean for photographers and photography moving forward? Like, do you think this is something that will become more prevalent in the photography world as the software continues to get better? Do you think they'll use it in like advertising or more professional environments?
Anytime I'm seeing stuff on Instagram, I just think it just seems like it really sucks to say, but it feels like throwaway art. Like people are just doing it to mess around. And it doesn't feel genuine, or a lot of what I have seen, and it's not to say that they don't exist. It seems like a lot of not genuine art of like people just like doing it to be funny or have like a fun little throwaway thing. I'm repeating myself there, but I haven't loved a lot of what I've seen. I think it's just kind of like weird and it feels like a fad.
Sure.
But when I'm thinking about my work and I'm thinking about like key art stuff, and even if I'm thinking about stuff like New York did like a really wild CGI creation of a trailer, essentially. Mm-hmm. I thought that was so incredible, and obviously that's a lot of CGI work. I think if AI can get to as good as it can be to really generate that kind of quality images, I think that's going to really you know, make our lives easier, going to make the lives of editors easier, and graphic designers. That way you can have more fun with it and then also just extend the boundaries of editing in general, too. And obviously, CGI has been so powerful, and there's so many talented designers out there that can literally create anything. But I think when you introduce AI into it, it's going to make life so much easier, I think. Mm-hmm. And if I'm putting it into the photography aspect, like, that's going to elevate our work, as long as it's used, like, in the most realistic way possible, I would say, or just in ways that make sense. It's going to elevate, like, Matt Murphy's work. It's going to make going to elevate Evan's work. It's going to elevate Emilio's work. You know, it's going to make all these key artwork very cool, and it's going to make Broadway probably even more interesting. And I don't want to just single out Broadway. There's going to be so many more industries that can benefit from this. With AI and the introduction of that, it's going to really just broaden the boundaries that we can do, and it's going to make our lives cooler and probably just give us some more interesting work to have in our portfolios, to be honest. Because, you know, in the, you know, with the key art photo shoot that I did for the Thanksgiving play, like, you know, I hand off the photos to AKA and they did their thing with it. I don't know what they're gonna do. Same with the Shuck stuff, you know. Carrie DeLisi, she did a wonderful job designing that. I think, you know, with however they're able to handle that with AI, like, they're going to be able to do some really cool stuff. You know, I'm not really the most imaginative, creative person. Like, I kind of like things a little more grounded. Obviously, like, can also alternatively come off as lazy, which I can admit to. But I do like to kind of keep things grounded, a little more realistic and a little more genuine, and natural. But, you know, so I don't have that kind of a mindset to be that creative. So, yeah, I just don't have that kind of creative mindset. And I think if I were tasked and hired to do something, a client needs me to make something really wild, AI is going to help me with that because I don't know what I'm doing.
Sure.
I make that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I'll put it that way. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. And I like you bringing in this Photoshop photographer too into the mix, because that is something I wanted to chat about. I want to go back to the early introduction of Photoshop, and then I want to go back a little bit further, and then I want to go, like, really, really far back. So just hang tight with me, because it's going to be a little bit of a ride. When Photoshop was first introduced, there were a lot of conversations about how it's going to ruin photography, right? So people were saying, oh, well, you'll never know what's real anymore. You'll never know what was actually captured or what was Photoshopped. And that was kind of a big conversation at that time. When I was doing some research for this episode, I found that people, you know, Ansel Adams.
Yes.
People were criticizing him when he was around for doing too much processing in the darkroom. And so people would get upset that his photos weren't even real anymore because of how much processing he was doing. He was even quoted as saying that the negative is the equivalent of the composer's score and the print is the performance. So he was pro editing in a way. Now, does that relate to Photoshop? I don't know. He, you know, was not around for modern day Photoshop, but would he have used it? I don't know. Can I speculate on this? I would say yes. I would say if he had switched over to digital, if he was around for that, for digital and Photoshop as it is today, rather, I think that yes, he would have used Photoshop, just based on what he was doing in the darkroom. Now, I'm going back, that was, you know, 100 years ago. Let's go back even further now. Plato had an argument against writing and books. Plato thought that the introduction of books would make people lazy because they would not want to memorize things anymore and, like, remember them. And so I think while no, that doesn't necessarily directly correlate to photography, it is interesting that as technology evolves, I think there are always going to be people who are against the change because they think that it's ruining the art, or they think it's ruining the medium. So for photography, I know that there's tons of articles. If you Google AI and photography, there are so many articles that are just talking about how it's going to ruin the medium. It's going to ruin photography. But then again, we go back and we say that processing in the darkroom was ruining photography. We go back and we have people saying that Photoshop was ruining photography. And I think it's more about how you are choosing to use these tools, whether it be Photoshop or AI. You know, I think we can make an argument that if a photo is 51% AI, is it really your photo anymore? But then again, we do a lot of Photoshop work sometimes. And so what does that say about our images? I don't necessarily have an answer here or like this general giant revelation to talk about, but what are your thoughts on that? Because I don't really know. And that's why we're having this conversation.
There's a lot of nuance here. It kind of comes down to, you know, when you're talking about how, you know, the old timer photographers don't like digital. And when that was kind of the issue, was the transition from all these SLRs, all these old film cameras into digital. It really kind of comes down to, what does photography mean to you? What is your definition of photography, or what is your own take, and what is your own passion when it comes to photography? Like, why do you love it? That's kind of what you have to ask yourself. I think that kind of comes down to also filmmaking and literally painting. And so here's my counter thing is like, my counter thing to people, I guess, against this AI stuff, and this, I'm kind of talking to myself here, is, you know, we look at all these paintings. Think of, think of any famous painter that you're going into a museum, and I'm kind of leaning more towards pop art, kind of like Andy Warhol type stuff. I would kind of argue that AI is kind of just a new way of painting and creating images and just being, and it's that level of creativity that is involved there. You are literally painting whatever your mind can come up with. And AI is literally painting whatever it is either prompted to do from the hands of the person that is thinking this up, or the AI is just creating whatever it can, is instructed to do, like whatever it's coded to do, put it that way.
Sure.
My counter is just, it's just another way of creating art and being creative. I think AI is going to be helpful, and especially when we're talking about noise reduction, that is a very simple task for AI to do, and it's been doing it well for me anyways.
Yeah.
You saw the photos I took for Ham for Ham. It was the first recent one with Sweeney Todd and Hamilton.
Yes.
The photos indoors, I used the denoise function of that AI, and it cleaned up so much. Now, however, there is a balance. You do have to strike because you will run into too much like softening and like ghosting. You will run into that if you're not careful. Mm-hmm. It depends on the photo and how much you're really boosting it.
Sure.
However, if you're in a pitch dark theater, it's really not going to help you. It will. I went to Good Night Oscar when they were doing a tech rehearsal day.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just pitch black. It was so dark. And I was trying whatever I could in camera to do it, but it was just so grainy. And even that denoise really wasn't helping too much. Helps a little bit though. But those Hamilton Sweeney Todd ones for him, those cleaned up the house photos so well. So if you go back and look at them, and they're pretty clean. The only downside of this using this AI is that it does slow down your editing time, essentially, because it takes some more processing power.
Sure.
And I'm using it on my M1 Max Studio, and it still takes a while, and even my M2 Mac it still takes a while. That takes even longer, actually.
Sure.
But it is worth it in the end. The end result is very nice. I wish I had it years ago. And if I could have an AI algorithm to retouch photos for me, handle all the flyaways, handle all the blemishes, it would make my life so much easier. And I'm sure a lot of retouchers can relate to that, unless if, you know, everyone's really good at it. I'm just the one really slow at it.
I am not personally. It takes me forever.
It takes But yeah, you know, I think that's really my answer, is kind of think of it as painting and just, what does photography mean to you? What does all this kind of art mean to you? I think there, everyone can adapt. Everyone's adaptable. We will get used to it. We got used to digital photography. We can get used to AI photography, which is very strange to say. I don't think I like it, but I think that's probably just kind of what we're going towards.
Yeah, no, I love that. And I love what you said too. I love that you brought in things like flyaways and retouching into it, because it's stuff that we can already do now. Like that, those are things that we're currently doing on a day-to-day basis. And so if, yeah, we did have a tool that could do it for us quickly, what's the difference between that tool doing the process that we were going to do manually and us doing it manually, I guess. I think the same thing of, you know, developing film as opposed to, you know, uploading your digital images. Like, what, it's a faster process. And it, if it's going to be faster for us, especially as people who are working in the industry and making our living in this industry, if it's going to benefit us and benefit our workflow without compromising the integrity of the photo, why not?
Yep, I fully agree, because if it can make our work more efficient, I think that is, that's the best thing. That's the best case scenario for me in terms of introducing AI into my workflow. I just want it to benefit me. I want to be able to go shoot more and edit less.
Absolutely.
And now video, when you get into the video aspect, I really don't think AI video, you know, I think that would be really tricky. Because you get really down to the nitty-gritty, finer details. And I think graphic designers would probably agree with that too. Mm-hmm. When it comes to, like, I really would be interested to see or hear what Carrie DeLisi would say. So I think that might be another extended conversation you could have with her and bring her on. But yeah, I really would want it to benefit me and make my work far more efficient than it is now. Because one thing is about me is, like, I really do take a long time for my work to get done. And I think my clients would probably appreciate that.
I'm sure they would too. I've recently had some people pushing me for some photos. So after this, I'll need to get back to it. But okay, I've got a couple more questions just to ask as a wrap up before we go. Again, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I'm super appreciative. I've wanted to have you on, like I said, since we started. And so I've got a few questions I ask everybody at the end, and I want to get to that with you. First of all, who are some of your favorite photographers at the moment?
You know, I don't really have at the moment. My additional preface to this is I don't really have it's not like I have a favorite director or I have a favorite comic book writer. I don't really have necessarily a favorite photographer that I would always go to. I love their work nonstop. Sure. I don't really have that. However, I have a gigantic list, or just, you know, anytime their work pops up on my Instagram, you know, I follow them for that reason, because I like their work a lot. Names I'll put out is, you know, one that's been kind of in my life, or at least in my sphere of what I pay attention to, is Peter McKinnon. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a guy that does both photo and video, and him and his circle of, and Peter Lindgren is another guy. Matty Hapoya too. Those guys, Chris Howe, those guys all do photo and video. And those guys have been who I've looked to for how things should get done. Help me with cameras. What's equipment I should be using? How should I be thinking about certain things? So those are guys that I've always been a fan of, and that have kind of been in my brain. But photographers right now that I kind of love seeing the work of is Sarah Snyder. She's a sports photographer for the Jets.
Yeah.
She does some other stuff too. I sent you her profile earlier today. And then Lee Jeffries is another guy. His work is wonderful. He's got some really good portrait stuff. To me, it's pretty simple, but I really, obviously, he has a very specific style, and it's a lot of black and white stuff. But even A-list stars like Josh Brolin, they buy his work. They buy his art.
Yeah.
Donald Boyd is another guy.
Oh, he's
he's a wildlife photographer.
Such good stuff.
awesome. I've wanted to get like some of his lion prints. They're just incredible.
They're amazing. His work on the volcano that erupted in Iceland was just insane.
Oh, it's incredible. Sorry, I just took a sip of water.
No, you're good.
His work is wonderful. And I would love to like sit down and talk with him. I actually have a friend, Navy Hilario. He's actually friends with him, and I actually want to
try and
do a conversation with him. You've worked with Navy before too. Who else? I wanted to throw out the names of Jared Polin. He's not like, I don't necessarily follow his like work in photography exactly. Like I'm not like googling over it is the word I would say is. But I really appreciate his knowledge.
Absolutely.
How much he wants to talk about it and educate people. And then I would also say the same for art of photography. I actually forget his name, but if you look up the art of photography on YouTube, it's this older guy. He's a really cool photographer. He's really good knowledge. And I love his feedback and just his thoughts on new gear, new Leicas, new whatever you think of. Because he's an older guy that, you obviously transitioned into digital. He's very open-minded about all this stuff and all this change. And then, Jared Polin's another guy, like I just said, he keeps up with the times. He's always educating people on what you can do better. What can you, they'll always do critique sessions. And these are guys that are just, I think, really beneficial to the industry that we're in right now. So, yeah.
Definitely. Yeah, that's great. No, I love Jared Polin. I started watching his videos when I was first getting into photography, and it helped a lot. I mean, those photo critiques are amazing. I want to submit some photos for a photo critique, but I'm also incredibly nervous to do that. Yeah. But no, I love him. I'm going to check out some of the other ones that you mentioned that I didn't know as well. But my last question here is, what advice would you give to a young photographer who's wanting to improve? And now this could be photographer, videographer. It doesn't matter.
Honestly, my advice to anyone that is, you're either starting out or you moved to a new city, you went to school for photography or video or filmmaking, and you're moving to a new city and you're just kind of get back into it. Really the best way to go about your work and the only way to do it, in my experience, is just to find whatever you can do. Like get whatever gigs you can get and go shoot whatever you can shoot that you're passionate about and don't feel like it's a chore to do. And just keep developing your style. Like my style didn't really develop until I got, honestly, until I came to the city, my style didn't really, around 2017, 2018, my style didn't really hit. Like I didn't really find my way of like, this is the professional way of doing it. I didn't figure it out until much later. Cause in college, like my stuff was, it's not great. I did a lot of headshots for a lot of theater folks. And a lot of my friends now, like my work was not good then, but, it helped me grow and get better as a person and a photographer. So it's, the goal that you should always keep in mind is that the more you work, the more you're going to learn and the more you're going to grow. And be open to mistakes. Be open to failing. Because you're always going to get better. You're always going to get, as long as you have the right mindset and you really want to be doing this stuff, you really need to be open to falling on your face. You're going to fuck up. Excuse my language, but you're going to mess up. You don't have to be perfect all the time. The advice I got when I moved to the city, his name is Micah, Micah Joel. He's a videographer. He said, his advice to me was, be perfect every time. Mm. And I think that is the goal to strive for. Be as perfect as you can, but don't hit yourself if you fuck up if something doesn't go the way you want it to. Because it's always a learning curve. Like if you forget one thing, it's okay. Like, there's been shoots where both you and I have like forgotten like a flash trigger.
Yeah.
Like we forgot that.
So recently.
Yeah. Both recently for us. So it's just like, things like that. And then if something doesn't go right, you don't get the photo. Even if it's for a client job, like I would hope that your client would understand if it's an event thing. Things happen quick. It's going to be okay. It's not the end of the world. It's not life or death. Obviously do the best work you can do with your clients and do the best work with whatever you're doing, but be open to failure. That's my message really.
That's great. Carrington, thank you so much. This was a blast. I really enjoyed talking with you, and I really appreciate you coming on the show.
Of course, man. I'm honored, and you know, I love talking to you. I'm really happy that you're able to do this again, because I have been telling you for so long to keep doing this podcast, so I'm really happy. I'm happy to be the first one. Happy you're doing it again.
Well, we're back, so we'll be doing some more soon, and I would love to have you come back on at some point in the near future. But thank you again. Thanks for being here. Thank you to everyone listening. And as always, we will see you next time on Live from the Dark Room.